Welcome to the Immerse podcast with your hosts, Alex O'Keefe and Dan Ramsden. As a collective, we are also the co-founders of Immerse Recovery, where we are building the home of recovery for everyday and world-class athletes. Our aim is to immerse you into education via our guests, bringing communities together, embracing positive change, and helping you to create solid habits that will yield the path for your health and longevity. As former sports people, we understand the importance of daily habit change, regular activity, optimal nutrition, sleep quality, and recovery strategies to optimise our daily performance. Our name, Immerse, represents all the elements of our ethos and it promotes a passionate message. We go again is our mantra. It symbolises the opportunity to achieve greatness through repetition, which in turn will allow you to recover quicker.
Lucy Bronze, MBE, thanks for joining us, or thanks for having us down here.
Welcome to the suite.
We definitely joined you, didn't we? Invading your private base. Thank you, we appreciate that.
Thanks for coming.
Where do we start with you, mate? That's the question. So, if we were to list all your achievements, I think we'd be here all day. But obviously, winning the Euros with England last year, as of Saturday, 4 times Champions League winner, UEFA BBC Women's Player of the Year numerous times, just to name a few if people didn't already know. I think it's important for us to kind of delve a bit deeper back into your journey, shall we say, and understand the roots of where you came from. So if you can take us back to some of the earliest memories of football, and just tell us about that time, Lucy, and how that was for you.
Well, I mean, the reason I started playing football, my parents, for one, but they like football now, but my dad doesn't play football, my mum doesn't, they don't watch football. But my brother is 2 years older than me, played football, did every sport. With all his mates, and honestly, I wanted to just be like my brother when I was younger. That was my goal in life, was to be the same as him, to beat him at everything. And he loved football, and I fell in love with football by playing with. That was the way of getting to be around him all the time.
Are you better than him?
That's where my competitiveness came out. He's older than me anyway, but he never let me win. Never ever. I enjoyed it. Like, my mum was, I had to do the same. I always tell the story, like, riding a bike for the first time. My brother could ride a bike at, like, 5 years old or something. So, obviously, I was 3. And my mum was like, you were determined to ride your bike just because your brother did. Like, you weren't letting him do anything better than you. I think that's where football and, like, my competitiveness and my love for sport in general was there from a young age. And yeah, I guess that's how it all started. I never really had a dream as a kid to play for England or win Champions League finals. It was like, I just want to play football because I love it. And I love playing with my brother and his mates and my mates.
Nice. Do you feel like that adversity there, it's just a little minor bit of adversity of I need to chase. Do you think that is important for success, to have that fire in your belly to go get something constantly, like on a minor level? You know, obviously for your achievements in sport, you've got to have, I feel, something that you just like, yeah, I need to go next one. Is that something that you feel is important for people listening, kids that are, you know, in a similar position, they might have a bit of talent, 11, 12 years old. Do you think they need that fire in their belly to compete almost anything and everything?
Yeah, I feel like that's been my kind of biggest asset. When I think of the small bits of adversity or the big parts of adversity that I've had in my career, those are the things that kind of springboarded me, like, even more. It was like the kind of cliche, like, one step back, two step forwards or two, whatever, but I did it one step backwards all the time, and I seemed to go two steps forwards because... like, I tell the story when I got injured at university, and all my friends in my age group were starting to get picked for England. And I was injured for a year, so I kept doing more and more because I thought I need to catch up. And I kept doing it for another 3, 4, 5 years, that same mindset, because I kept thinking I was behind. And it was only for a moment where I stopped and thought, I've actually overtook those girls who I was trying to catch up with. I overtook them ages ago, but I hadn't realised it because I was constantly trying to chase something. I think that's what I've always had. I've always wanted to chase the next thing and had another goal to look ahead to, and not just being like, could have easily gone last year, I've won the Euros, that's job done. But it was like, no, what's the next thing? There's always something else that you can do, and something more you can do.
So fast forward to now, what motivates you now? Obviously you had that then and you've achieved so much. What's the next drive for you?
I guess obviously the World Cup's a huge thing. But just competing, and I think people, when they talk about me, the girls who I play with, it's always about winning. And I don't think it's necessarily just winning, it's the competing. I just, that's what drives me, that's what I get enjoyment out of. Even if I never made football to the highest level, if I was playing at a lower level, I'd still love playing football because I just love competing. I love that competitiveness. I think it gives me like a buzz to feel like, to try and overcome something. I mean, we were talking before about the Champions League being 2-0 down. Yeah. That was kind of more exciting, being 2-0 down and having something to go up against than just already being ahead 2-0 and thinking, oh, the game's done. It was like that excitement. It's hard to find in other things other than in playing sport, and for me that's in football.
Nice. Obviously the journey that you've been on has been a bit of a wild one, let's say. We were just talking off camera a minute ago about FA Cup final, and you had to, you know, scrimp and scrape in Asda to get there. Can you tell us a little bit like about what happened there, you know, and how long ago it was and where you are now? Because it's quite an insane journey, isn't it, from one extreme to the other?
Yeah, I think that's something that I really love about the career that I've had, which not many people are going to have, that the beginning of my career, like you said, we made the FA Cup final when I was 17 years old. So at the beginning of my career, and we didn't have enough money to even get the bus to play in the final, which is insane. So we had to go backpacking, you know, one of the local supermarkets to try and raise a bit of money just to cover the cost of the bus to get there.
Can't believe that.
Which is crazy. That was in my career. Whereas now we're talking about, you know, when I play for England or when I play for Barcelona, we get like a chartered plane to games. Never mind having to raise like a couple of pounds to get from Sunderland. I think we played in like Nottingham or something. So it was just straight down the M1 and we couldn't afford the bus. Whereas, go move ahead like, 15 years later. That kind of journey of women's football, which has just increased each year. You know, the crowds have got bigger, the funding's got bigger, the quality and everything's just got bigger and better. That's kind of been the span of my career as well. So now I'm at this point where, you know, we play in the Euros last year, selling out Wembley, we sell out stadiums regularly. You know, playing football is my full-time job, which previously I worked at Domino's, I went to university, I worked in a bar. I've been at the one end of the spectrum right to the other end, so I quite enjoy that. I feel like it's given me,
that's gratitude,
like,
though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's given me like a better outlook. I think it makes me appreciate everything, no matter how much I do now. I'm always going to appreciate it because before I had next to nothing. Whereas kids these days, they don't know how good they've got it.
I was saying that now.
One of them.
You know, do you see a difference in the younger players coming through? Is there not as much gratitude there, do you feel?
I think they have gratitude because I think they respect the older players so much. Like, even now I can feel like the kids when they, I don't want to call them the kids, when the younger players come and they speak to me and stuff, I can see they're like not in awe, but they understand everything that I've done in my career and how hard it was to do that. I just think it's a different era, and I think I'm proud and happy that they don't have to necessarily go through that hardship. I think the younger players now have developed differently, so they've maybe got a bit more quality and understanding of the game because they've been given more of that kind of resource, whereas the older players probably have that grit and that fight in them more because that was almost like the resource that we were given when we was younger, even though it was, we weren't given anything. So we found like a positive out of it, which was our determination, our grit. I think that's why you look at England teams in the past and a lot of the players have been those kind of gritty players who'll always work hard, will always do what they're told. And then now we've got players, we've got a mix of those type of players and attitudes with the kind of the players who have got quality and a kind of different outlook on the game. So it's maybe that's why England been successful last year.
Yeah, it's a nice mix, and it? It's nice to see a good solid unit. I think it's in both camps now as well. I think the male team have found that finally as well. They look like they're enjoying the time together.
Yeah, and I think some of it as well comes from like just sharing stories. I think that's what a lot of the younger players love. I mean, they love hearing some of the stories, apart from we tend to repeat ourselves a lot and tell them, I used to backpack when I went to the final. Yeah. But I think, you know, it's sharing experiences. When people talk about experienced players, I never really used to understand that when I was younger. I was thinking, I can still play just as good as them. Like, what the hell is experience? Mm. But I think it's not necessarily, doesn't necessarily make you a better player, but it can help the people around you by sharing the stories, making them understand things differently, to maybe switch their mentality or push their mentality in a different direction, which can help them succeed.
Yeah. I just want to kind of share the excitement of the Euros with you again from last year, because it was just, you know what it's like in England when the men are playing, and it were very similar, you know, when you guys did it. So it was just like, could you just like, were you imagining what the scenes were like at, you know, in people's homes and on the streets, or were you just kind of like fully focused on the task? Or,
yeah, I think,
do you know what I mean?
I think we kind of got like boarded up a little bit from the outside world, which is crazy, because we were in England, like we stayed in London practically the whole of the Euros. But we kind of got cut off from our family and friends because, you know, they wanted to make sure about COVID and stuff at the time. We didn't tend to look too much into media, social media. We kind of got kept away. We actually had some of the lads, Trippier and Declan Rice, came before the Euros to speak to us about how like they kind of had to cut the media off a lot to like focus more on what they were doing and how they didn't even see like all the stuff from when they were did so well at the Euros as well until afterwards. Or I seen videos afterwards, and that was the same for us. Seeing it all afterwards was when we kind of were like, whoa. Yeah. This is crazy.
You'll be going into lads' changing rooms this time to give them advice.
Yeah, it's nice
this
now.
Is how you do it, Mark.
Yeah, like we've got like a good mix now. Like we do a lot of stuff together, and obviously all the lads, they like watched our games and stuff, and they are big supporters of us, which is nice, because obviously it's been so easy to watch and follow England men's football for so long. But now everyone's got that buzz, so there's plenty of players like Jordan Henderson, Declan Rice, loads of them. I don't want to keep name dropping or anything, but there's loads of them that are like big fans, and they send us messages and stuff. So it's nice that we've got that mix there. Yeah, we're united, and I think the country feels that as well. The men are doing really well; they've been successful. Yeah. We have as well, so it's kind of like we're all sharing in each other's success
and how it should be.
Experiences. Yeah.
Nice. The thing for me that really struck a chord with me was during the footage during the games. It pans to a young girl in the crowd, and she's got tears in her eyes. I'm just thinking, like, we're both fathers, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
I'm just thinking, like, our daughters can look up to people like you, and that's just such a deep thing, isn't it? How does that make you feel?
Yeah, I think that's one thing my mum always, like, because I obviously didn't really have that as a child. But my role models were very much like my family members, like, because they're so strong-minded. My mum and my auntie especially, like, don't take no for an answer from anyone. Like, my mum always reminds me of that. And I think it's nice because, I guess, predominantly little girls have probably not felt as empowered in general in the world. So it's nice that they can kind of, put their chest up a bit and think, there's these women out there being successful and everybody, most people respect them and everybody looks up to them and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's nice to give like those little girls a sense of like you can do anything, you can be what you want to be.
Yeah.
But I also like when I was younger, I played with the boys and I had the best time with like my mates playing. Mm. But they all like they didn't see me as like different. It was just she's a girl, she can play football and what.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's nice to see that angle as well, where little boys as well can be like, oh yeah, girls can do anything, and then they can push their friends as well, and girls can feel comfortable to be like, oh yeah, like he even said that girls can do stuff, like maybe we can. So yeah, it's nice that a lot of like that balance is kind of changing.
My son plays football, and one of the bigger lads on his team were making a run, and one of the girl defenders come across and she absolutely clattered him, and he's one of the biggest lads on the field, and everyone were like, yes, get in. And
it's just like, yes.
Yeah, no, but and that's what you need everyone leveling up together, you know, not secluding it.
Yeah,
everyone's included. Was that an hard transition for you, obviously having to start with playing with the lads, and then there comes a point where you can't do that anymore? Was that a tough
I think aside from like injuries and stuff, that was really tough, because it was about 11-12, which is like quite a pivotal moment, and when you like turn
you step
into
up to the full size
and you're like around a teenage age and stuff. And I loved playing with the boys because that was my mate. Like I was painfully shy as a child. So shy, and football and sport was how I like connected with people. And like the boys who lived like on my street down the road, like they were who I played football with. That's how I made friends, was through sport. So then at the age of 11-12, it was like, well, you have to leave your mates now, and you're gonna have to go drive an hour and a half. My dad used to come leave work early to take me and make a bunch of new friends in a completely different area. That was actually so challenging for a kid of, you know, 11, 12 years old.
Who was right, is it?
Yeah, so shy. I was quite lucky that I made best friends with another Lucy Staniforth. We both went and played for England together, who lived close to me, because she was a lot better people person than I was. So I'm very fortunate to have her there to help me make new friends and stuff. But it was a difficult moment, and I was lucky as well to have a family that my mum and dad were willing to take me to football, even though they didn't really understand why I loved it so much.
Yeah. You realise the commitment, don't you, when you get a bit older and you realise what your parents actually did for you.
Oh, yeah.
You're just like, well, thank you for that.
100%. Yeah. That's why I try and like help them out a little bit now. They like want to travel the world, come in and watch me play, which is nice. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of successful athletes, not just in women's football, they've got someone, whether it's parents or siblings or a neighbour, they've got someone who's kind of been there to help support them, take them places, or even just a shoulder to cry on in the bad moments and stuff. So my parents are definitely that for me.
Nice. What do you feel is the most powerful thing to have as an athlete? Is it talent, or is it like grit, determination? What, obviously you need a balance of everything, but what do you think trumps, what is it that you need, what is the ingredient? If someone's listening to this now, a 13-year-old girl, what do they need to get them over the line?
I mean, for me, it was my mindset and my mentality. I think that's the thing that's always separated me from other players, because I've always said I'm just as talented as a lot of players. I've got obviously natural talent. I think mine's like my physicality. I think most people have got some sort of natural talent that they've maybe not tapped into or not realised. But I think the mentality, for example, for me was like, you can have that talent, but to make the talent better, you almost need the mentality to go out and put the work in, to think, no, I need to do more. Whereas like a mentality of thinking, oh, like a talent's enough. Like, I'm a good player. That's fine. Like, that's not really, it's not, it could get you places, but you're kind of limiting yourself. I think your mind is one of the most powerful, for me, it's like the most powerful muscle in the body to push yourself. There's walls that you can break down. You think, oh, I can't keep running. That's you thinking that. Your legs aren't stopping you. You're thinking that. And I think I've had so many moments in my career where I thought, my mentality and the way I think is the thing that's kind of took me to the next level. And when I think about the players who I've played with as well, who have gone on to win Ballon d'Ors or, you know, had unbelievable performances, it's their mentality that's been the difference because I've played with talented players, or players who are just as talented. I've played with players just as talented as me who haven't won as much as I have. And the only difference I've ever seen was that I've just been more determined, more resilient, and a little bit more crazy to to go out and put the work in and to just never give up.
Amen to that.
Yeah, that's what we talk about a lot on this podcast, and it's predominantly mindset. And I always compare like a younger version of myself, because I've played football since I was six and played non-league, not quite reached the heights you got to, Lucy. But I just always think... No.
Not far.
I always think if I had the mindset I have now...
Then
I'm like, oh my God, dangerous.
People always say that, like, what would you tell your younger self? And I'm like, do you know what? I'm so glad that my younger self was crazy. Like, if anything, my mindset when I was younger was, like, not, like, worse, it was better. Mm. Like, I was crazy competitive.
Yeah.
Like... Even like in England, when I first started playing for England, people used to try and wind me up if I didn't win a game, because it was that easy to wind me up. Because
do you have to win everything?
Like everything.
If it's a training drill and you have to run box to box.
If it's a game of pool, I'm not even good at pool.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, literally. One of the girls like takes the mick out of me because we play rock, paper, scissors. She's like, I beat you twice. I'm like, it's literally a game of luck. But she's like, why are you arguing with me? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, everything I used to want. And I played every sport as well. So I was like, and I used to play with my brother, who's obviously going to beat me when I was younger because he was older and he was a boy. In a race or at tennis because he was more powerful, I was a sore loser, such a sore loser. I hated the feeling of losing more than the feeling of winning.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
That's what drives you, isn't it?
That was what drove... When I was younger, I kind of had to mellow it out a little bit because I'm in a team sport and they were like, you can't keep being so crazy. So I found a balance where I still need to win, but I can hone it in to make it the best thing for the team as well.
What's your schedule like now, Lucy, in terms of how do you have to operate on a daily basis to keep your athleticism, to keep you sharp, your pace, your agility, your strength? Do you just get told what to do now by your conditioners, or have you got your own routines in place as well?
Yeah.
What is it that makes you tick?
I mean, we get a lot of support now, which is amazing, but like 10, 15 years ago, we didn't really. And I went to university and basically studied like biomechanics, knee injuries, physiology, like of sport and of football.
That came in good use for you.
Yeah, because I was like, I need to teach myself because nobody else is going to help me. Mm. And I think through that education and then experience, a lot of the time now when I'm at, whether I'm England or Barcelona or City or Lyon, like I've played for some of the best teams in the world, they're kind of like, oh, you know your body best, we trust it, we know what you're like, you're going to do the things. It's not like we need to sit and tell you, Lucy, you need to run more, you need to do this more. Like, if anything, we need to tell you to stop.
So
I enjoy, even if I'm not playing and not got games, like at Christmas I'm meant to have 2 weeks off, but I always go and do a 5K park run with my family because I like being active and stuff anyway. So I find that ticking over and keeping in shape and fit like quite easy, because it's something that I think people always say like it's a bit of a pain to start it, but once you've done something, that feeling after going to the gym or going for a run is like the best feeling ever.
Yeah. I completely agree. What's some of your favourite ways to recover? And I know we've seen you posting about cold water therapy.
Yeah.
Which is exciting. Tell us about cold water therapy. What's the benefits?
Yeah, I love ice baths. At one point in England, they used to make us do like a proper... Like, obviously, we'd only kind of do up to our hips because the girls don't really like going deeper. But I remember before 1 Euros, we was heavy on being, we wanted to be the fittest team in this tournament. Mm. So we had to be the best team at recovering as well. So we used to have to do like a proper dunk in the ice bath.
Mm. How long?
Only a couple of minutes of like up to your neck.
Just enough.
That's, yeah, it was enough. Yeah, but slowly, like, less and less players started to do it. I think by the end, there was probably three or four of us that, like, did it the whole time.
The crazy gang.
There was a couple of them before. I think now the younger players don't like it as much. I have to push them in a little bit. I don't know. I absolutely love ice baths. I think because I run so much, like, that's my main thing, is, like, being strong, being powerful, like, running a lot. Like, my body does tend to ache more than other people's because I do cover more distance. Mm. So then that relief of sitting in an ice bath, especially when it's hot. Mm. And I live in Barcelona now, yeah, so
on the balcony.
Yeah, on the balcony. That's why, yeah, I would go in the sea in Barca, which is absolutely freezing, but it's nice because it's sunny.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
We did one last week, and we went in the, did a workout and went to a reservoir and we went in for 6 minutes head under them dry walks it off, you know, we didn't dry ourselves out, we were just like going in hardcore style, and the buzz from that were about 4 hours after, just naturally nice and high all day, so, you know, we're definitely advocates of it, and it's nice to know that this is the message, guys, we know we talk about it a lot, it's not just the physical benefits, it's the mental, you feel like you've had a win, don't you, for the day, it feels like you've achieved something, even though it's just something so small. You don't want to do it. It's like training. You don't really want to do it. But then when you start and you're like, oh, I'm into my flow now. And then when you finish, you're like, really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I think ice baths are, something that everybody gets told to do, like, after. Mm. And I think that's when I just fell in love with ice baths and swimming. And just, I don't know, I think I just like being in the water in general. And then it was like a couple of months ago, a friend was like, I seen her on her Instagram, was doing it before training, so I thought, I'm going to try this in my swimming pool in the winter. We've got a swimming pool at the apartment block, and in the outdoor, not heated,
right?
So in the winter it was very cold, so I tried that a couple of times in the morning, and I was like, god, I was waking up at 8 o'clock, but I felt like I was like fresh, ready to go, like, that was something that I've only just started doing this year.
So that sustained high throughout the day. And you don't ever want to get in, do you?
No.
When you approach it, you wake up. Oh, my God. Here we go.
Like that couple of seconds just before you get in.
Yeah.
Like, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah. Go on,
I'm lucky because the pool's, like, deep, so I can't, there's no, like, little baby end. It's either you're going in or you're not.
Yeah.
So that makes it, that's a little bit easier. But I think once you've done it a couple of times and realise how good it feels, then it becomes easier. But the first time, I was like, why am I up at 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
Dunking in a freezing cold pool. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah, we were cracking ice in January, weren't we? Yeah, that was something else.
Yeah. That's how we actually first connected, though, Lucy, and we were talking about cold water. I thought, I'm going to reach out to her. And there's something else potentially bubbling in the background as well. We're not going to mention that right now, but that's how we first connected. Just the fact that you were just so open to respond to a stranger who's messaged you on Instagram, I just thought, fair play, you know, and because you'll get a lot of messages, won't you?
I think obviously you guys reached out because it was, you seen the video with the cold water, and on a lot of it was posted, I think it was on like Mental Health Day or month, I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But it was, I guess that was the reason that I wanted to post about it more, because it's something that I've always done for recovery anyway. Mm. But I guess that was, this year I've realised a lot. I mean, I've always been aware of mental health and how important it is. Mm. You know, I think it's something that's really important in everyday life, but in sport, you know, a lot of us have psychologists that we speak to. It's become normal to do things like that. And then, the cold water this year has become like a thing where I've realised it's so beneficial for your mental health. Mm. And, well, I feel it anyway. Mm. So sharing that felt really important. And then obviously that was something that you guys wanted to connect with. And I don't know, I feel like it's an important topic that I want to talk about, that I want to... Mm. Like, help people out there if there's like maybe someone who goes and just listens to this, and there's one person that goes and tries it and it makes them feel better, then that's job done for me. Like, that makes me feel like I'm helping even just one person make a difference in their life would be fantastic. So the opportunity to do that is amazing.
Yeah,
I'm going to sort of sway towards like female mental health and body image and things like that. I think there's a big, because I'm a coach, I'm a PT, I help a lot of females with this sort of thing. Can I just ask you, you're in cracking shape, you're an athlete, you're very lean, you're very strong, fast, athletic, etc. Is body weight an issue to you? Or has it been?
I think so, yeah. Well, I don't think so. Yeah, it has. I think...
And is it now?
I think there's always, like, a voice in your head that, like, there's a small bit of doubt. I think in women's football or women's sport, obviously, is difficult because I think so much of, like, so many people put that perspective on women, like, what they look like. Yeah. And, like, at the end of the day, the athletes, like, if they perform the best that they can and get the best results, doesn't matter what they look like, like, what their body looks like. But it seems to be something that, I don't know, people, whether it's sponsors or media or fans, like, comment on. And I think a lot of players or athletes in general kind of hear that noise. I think it is quite difficult for women in sport. And I think... Yeah, like, say women's football, for example, obviously it's getting bigger and bigger. There's more eyes on us. There's kind of that pressure to look, to act a certain way, to speak a certain way, to look a certain way comes within that. And I think many people feel the pressure of that. I think there's been many players who have had really big problems. I wouldn't say I have a really big problem, but certainly I'm not, like, shy to say, have I ever thought about how I look and how people think I look? Like, of course I have. I think most of the girls that I've ever played with have probably had that at some point, whether it's been for a split second or it's their entire career, which is incredibly sad to think about.
We all... That's not just female athletes. I think it's just...
It's a society thing.
And, you know, that's something that I'm passionate about trying to cover and overcome with people. And it's almost like, see your health journey as it being healthy inside out, you know, not working on outside in. Go within first, then do everything from a self-love perspective. Try not to look at a metric on a scale and get freaked out by it, you know, that sort of thing where, oh my god, I'm 65 kilos, but you might perform your best there.
Yeah,
you know, and being okay with that. I think, you know, that's something that I'm passionate about, trying to hit that message home.
Yeah, I think when I was younger, like, it's funny when you say that about the metric, like, well, I've been this size since I was, like, 14 years old. I was bigger than everybody. And I remember going to, like, England camp or something, and you have to weigh yourself, not because of any reason. It's just, like, we do height, weight, everything like that. It's just, like, to tick a box.
Yeah.
It wasn't to, like, monitor you or anything.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at other people's and thinking, God, they're like 10, 15 kilograms lighter than me. Like, I was like, didn't want anyone to look when I was stepping on, even though I was the strongest player there. I was the fittest player there, one of the fastest. Like, that was why, like, that was why the number was the way it was. And I remember saying it to my mum and I'm thinking, God, I'm so much bigger than everybody else. And my mum was like, yeah, but muscle weighs more than fat. Always had to, used to remind myself that all the time. And it took a while for me to, like, be proud of that and to not be bothered and to think, actually, that's my strength as in me as an athlete, is I'm stronger, faster and fitter than everybody. That's why the number is what it is. The number's irrelevant, if anything.
If you dropped 5 kilos, you might not,
like,
be that,
like, my high
person.
Number is, like, my high score. Like, it's... I had to, like... Yeah. I think that was difficult for, like, a teenager to think of. Again, I was very lucky. My mum was very, like... My mum thinks I'm the best person in the world. Like, most mums think of their daughters. So I was lucky to have that. But it was something that, I thought about a lot when I was younger and had to, again, do, like, a mindset switch of... It's not a bad thing. It's actually my, like, super strength, if you will.
Yeah, and that's a nice way of thinking about it, looking at it. So any girls out there, take that advice,
yeah,
please.
Like, you know, be strong.
Flip it on its head. And it's okay. What is your sweet spot then for athletic performance? Where do you sit as an athlete?
with your weight, like where's that good for you?
Like my weight literally can be, I've been as low as 65 kilograms, which people probably won't think that's low, but for me that's quite low, and being up to like 72, I think my sweet spot's in the middle, like 68, which is, I'd say, is higher than, like, yeah, well, it's in, say, in the England team, I'm probably one of the highest, but I'm the strongest, I don't care.
I've seen you tackle.
Yeah, I'm strong, I can jump, I can run for this reason. So I love it because when I go to train and I think, oh, you little girls, you don't stand a chance against me. So yeah, I guess that's the thing, I've looked at it as like a good thing. I guess if you'd asked me that question 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have answered. I wouldn't have been proud of it at all.
You're right. But that's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know. And yeah, growth.
And I think it's okay to be like, not worried, but to have like questions. I think you ultimately have to go through that with everything, is to think, oh, maybe I'm not so comfortable. And then you learn to be comfortable with those things when you educate yourself or you understand better what it means for you.
Yeah.
You're not just born and understand like what weight and strength or health or what mental health means. You have to, there's a process to learning those things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What's your weak point as an athlete?
In terms of weight or...
No, just athleticism, any kind of training, strength.
No,
like,
weakness.
What, yeah, like it.
my weakness, God. I mean, injuries are have been my biggest weakness, but in terms of things that I can affect, I don't know.
I like that.
Yeah, because you can't control...
You're not letting it in.
No.
I like that.
The things that I can affect...
Good answer.
Yeah.
No, answer is good answer.
Yeah, no, the things that I can affect, like, if I probably have plenty of weaknesses, but I guess I've worked on them so much to try them for them to not be... For me to not see them as weaknesses, just things to work on, I guess. And if you ask me what things I have to work on, I'd probably say everything.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen
to
that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Lucy, away from the... big crowds, the trophies, the everything. How do you switch off? Or do you?
I never properly switch off. I think that's my biggest weakness.
Mm-hmm. Right, there you go.
As I'm obsessed sometimes. Like, I have a terrible sleeping pattern, which I've had to just learn to be okay with and learn that that's actually enough for me to function because my head's 100 miles an hour. But I guess my best way of switching off is I've got a little dog. Go for walks. Sometimes, like, even after a game, the poor dog has to go for a walk at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning. Because I'm still awake, if I sit at home, sitting on the sofa, it's not going to help me, or if I'm, like, sat on my phone, so... Mm. Tend to put some music on. It's quite nice in Barcelona as well because it tends to be warm still.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I tend to put my headphones in and go for a walk at any time. That's
basic.
I do that every day.
With a sleep expert though, didn't we? And who works with professional athletes, and he was talking about scheduling things in, you know, to suit that individual.
Yeah,
you know, you make it work. Don't get stressed out about.
Yeah,
sleep,
that's.
You know?
I literally had the same thing. I spoke with a sleep expert, and everyone was constantly trying to change how I slept because basically I don't sleep long enough for what the books say.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I function very well. Mm. So the sleep expert was like, "Do you go to bed early?" I said, "Well, I try to go to bed earlier because everyone tells me I need to have 9 hours of sleep, but all I do is sit there and stress that I'm not sleeping." And he was like, "Well, that's just a waste of time." He's like, if you only need 6 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, and you play well, and you function well, and you eat well, what's the problem? Like, don't stress out. So, no stress over sleep anymore.
That's it.
Finally.
There we go. I think that's the key now. That, you know, with how the game's gone for you, how much support you get now as an athlete, these are all things that you'd have been uncertain of, you know, back in the day before all this. So, it's nice to know that you're getting that full support on all angles, and then you can come on to shows like this and help future generations mm-hmm. make better decisions. And oh yeah, I were worried about that. Oh no, I don't need to worry about it anymore.
Oh yeah, that's what I mean about sharing stories with like experience and stuff. Like that's something that I say to people all the time who I didn't sleep well last night. And I'm like, yeah, but are you tired? Like, can you train well? Are you still eating well? Like, those are the important things. Like, I don't sleep a lot and I'm fine. And I think that experience and having all those resources and tapping into a sleep expert, a nutrition expert, and getting all the information, but then putting it out for yourself and then being able to share, actually, is not one size fits all. You have to find what works for you. And that's kind of what I've spent my career doing, is find out what works for you, whether it's mentality, recovery, whatever it is, what works best and what do you enjoy doing.
Is that nutrition as well and supplements, etc.? Is that the same sort of attitude that you have towards that?
Yeah. I'm good friends with my nutritionists always. I'm good friends. I love food. I love every single food. Don't get me wrong, I would love to eat, like, I love cakes and ice creams. I'm not going to sit here and say I don't eat stuff like that. But everything in moderation is, and finding the right times where you can, you know, maybe diverge a little bit more in the stuff that you maybe really like, and when are the right times to be a bit more focused and strict. I think that's how I've worked my career, is I want to enjoy what I'm doing. I want to enjoy what I'm eating. Just have to find a balance. And I always say, I can eat whatever I want as long as I train really hard the next day. That's the best way.
That's healthy advice, though, isn't it? Because it's not like you need to cut everything out. No. It's just like, moderation.
Moderation. And if you're working hard, then you can afford to treat yourself a little bit. Like, I mean, there's plenty of people, don't get me wrong, who get really obsessed with it and it works for them. That doesn't work for me.
Like, can you stick with it? That's the thing.
Yeah, like, is it maintain? Can you maintain it? If you can, brilliant. And you can follow the exact rules and the exact measurements of what you should be eating, and you enjoy that, and that's functional for you, brilliant. And if it's not, you can find a different way to work for you. And I'm not by the book.
Yeah.
I like to do it my own way.
Yeah, that is good. That's what we want. We're getting close, aren't we, Al?
We're getting close.
We don't want to keep you all day in your hotel room. We're going to do a little quick fire round. So this is what your preference is.
Okay.
Yeah. So, to score a goal or to get a bone-crunching tackle, to give one, you know.
Depends what where the tackle is. I'd say a goal for that, but if it's like, I'm stopping them literally from scoring,
that's just as good as a goaler.
Yeah, literally. For me, yeah.
I think so. I've come from a rugby background, and
so you are.
I loved hitting people. I just loved it. It was just amazing.
Right, I've got one. England or Spain?
What for?
What do you like most? What's your preference?
I love living in Spain.
That's a difficult one, that.
I think the pause tells you everything. I mean, obviously, I love playing for England and I'm English, but I can't lie, it's nice to live in Spain.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think most
we'll
English...
say England.
Okay.
We'll say England.
Oh, okay. If you'd have said Spain, I'd have
I think most people would understand if I said Spain, but it's fine.
Trainers or trackies?
Trainers. Yeah.
Champions League or World Cup?
World Cup.
Nice.
No hesitation.
No.
And this brings us on to our last question. Are we going to win the World Cup?
Say yes.
Come on.
Oh. Come on.
Come on, Lucy.
No hesitation.
Come on now. Here we go. Yeah. So that wraps it up, really. Thank you for having us. Thanks for chatting with us. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking time out for us. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. And bring it home.
Let's go.
Bring it home.
You've been listening to the Immerse podcast with Alex O'Keefe and Dan Ramsden. If you're enjoying these conversations, you can follow us on all major streaming platforms and get ready to immerse yourself into the upcoming and exciting conversations that we have in store for you. In addition to this, if you're looking to enhance your performance and overall well-being, you can follow our recovery brand at Immerse Recovery on all social media platforms. Alternatively, you can visit www.immerserecovery.co.uk.